Accession number 9339, Reel 7.
Mr. William Holbrook, Reel 7. Could you tell me how you were sent to France and on what date, if you can remember?
Yes, well, of course, war broke out on the 4th of August. We left France after we got the reserves. They all came to and all got fixed up with the various companies, like the four companies. We left for France on the 14th of August. That's 10 days after. Okay. We marched to Cowes, the Isle of Wight. And from Cowes we went across to Southampton by boat, and at Southampton we got on a troop ship there and went to Le Havre.
Was there any sort of send-off from the Isle of Wight or anywhere? Was there any? Did the local population come and cheer you off or anything
like that? Oh, no, not so. What about it? No, didn't see anyone. The only thing I remember, which I always think of, is that when we got to the Cowes, was waiting on the beach after the boat, the small boat across to Southampton. There's a periodical governor at that time, I don't know if you've heard, called John Bull. It was published by a man named Bottomley, become a famous or infamous man in his time, Horatio Bottomley. Anyway, he published this, and on it, on the side of the house, was a placard, or an advert advertising John Bull. And what always becomes reminded me is that the words were, the dawn of Britain's greatest glory. That's all he got on there, nothing but just John Bull and the dawn of Britain's greatest glory. That's the whole side of a house. And as I was lying there for an hour or so, I thought to myself, I wonder whether it will be or not. It went through my mind. I didn't speak to anyone. I thought, I wonder whether or not. I've also often thought of that. And some years afterwards, only about a few years ago really, I saw a mention of it in a newspaper. The very thing about this John Bull and this advert they had on the side of the house. And I remember sitting there, so I don't know. Of course, I didn't know what war was like, and I thought to myself, I wonder whether it would be or not. And then that was that. So then we went across to Southampton and got on the boat to Southampton with Le Havre. Well, when we got to Le Havre,
was there anything untoward on the journey across that you could? Is there anything you remember?
No,
about
quite a peaceful journey across.
But did you have an escort?
No, nothing. And when got to Le Havre, of course we detrained there and camped there for about 3 or 4 days, and then we went to entrained at Le Havre and went to. Up to the front, as you go up the front. Well, the nearest you got to the front was called, as far as the last town was.
Landrecies?
Hmm?
Was it Landrecies?
Landrecies, that's it, Landrecies. And,
but before, the train you were put on, what sort of train was it? Was it one of these cattle truck trains? Or
yes, like 8 Chevelle, 40 Holmes, 8 also 40 men, same sort of thing.
So it wasn't a normal train?
Oh, no. We detrained we marched from there to the front. We didn't know where we were going. And got to the whole division, or the brigade. The whole brigade came together. It was 4, and we were the 9th brigade. There was the we were the third brigade, 9th brigade, and there was us, the Royal Fusiliers, Royal Scots Fusiliers, Lincolnshire Regiment, and Northumberland Fusiliers. That was our brigade. Well, we the old division didn't go, so we went by brigade to what was the front. Well, we should take turns in a different battalion. It took a few days to get there, 3 or 4 days, but each day there was a different battalion that had to lead the way, like first base, so the Fusiliers and the Northumberlands. And but the day we got to Mons, it wasn't our turn to be at the front. We were at the front the day before. But as our second commander, Major Maddock, it took us on the wrong journey, the wrong route, as a punishment, we had to do the lead the next day in front. And that, of course, led us right straight into Mons. So we, that's why we were actually in Mons, the 1st Battalion got into Mons. Through that, of course, all the brigade was there within a half hour or so, but that's how we got into Mons, from Nimi into Mons, by being the punishment, no punishment, of course, but then when we got there, of course, we were split up into the four companies, and I was Bowden Smith. Captain Bowden Smith was captain of my company, and there was the other companies was four, Captain Cole, Ashburn and Bing.
How had the local population treated you?
Very nicely. Before we got to Mons, we went through a place called Framiers. That was a mining town about 10 miles from Mons, something like that. And there we were wonderful. The people there come out and cheered and shouted and given us food and so on. There was all sort of a tremendous welcome there at Framiers. And I often think of that within 2 or 3 days after I was knocked about. I went through the part on the retreat, but of course a lot of the villages had left and cleared off. They went to Mons itself, as I say, we lined the bank there. I was orderly then, so I went up to, I was really in Bowden Smith's company, but as being Israel, I was a job as an orderly. I didn't run back with, that many messages back. It wasn't really a pleasant job. And because they lined machine gun party.
So you weren't with the colonel?
No, he's headquarters town somewhere. No, the signallers were down there, and but I wasn't there. But I went down to him with any message to go down. I think I took two. Anyway, the first one, I don't know, of course, what it contained, but while the fighting was on, I had to go down this message from Nimi down into Mons. And, of course, I didn't know my way, really, but I found it.
We'll come to that when we got to the start of the fighting. But you were separated from the colonel. You were with
your company. Yes, I was with the colonel.
What positions did you take up? Could you describe what the positions your battalion took up? It was on the river, was it?
It was on the bank. On the bank of the river. It was a... ground was rather rough. It was hilly, but there was quite a few rises in the ground down high. But and I was with the company commander, that was Bowden Smith, and one or two of the signallers, and I was there as an orderly. So any message that to me, why they didn't send, but why that nobody anyway, personally, I used to go back. I went back and found the headquarters. I didn't know where it was really.
Where do you set up machine guns and things like that?
Machine guns on the bridge on their left, on my left. That's where God the Indecent...
That was to the left of where
yes,
you were?
Yes,
Did you have any cover at all?
No.
Have you dug any trenches at all?
No, well, a bit of cover, nothing much. No trenches, anything like that. And the...
What happened when the... When did the Germans first approach? What can you remember about that?
Oh, the night before, about the 22nd, I think. But not much, but most of the fight started early on the 23rd, I think it was the 23rd.
So take us through, exactly what happened to you and what you could see.
Well, we were shelling and that sort of thing, shrapnel shells and rifle fire across the river, or the canal. And we had a few casualties where I was, and the machine gun part, they had the worst part of it on the bridge. And quite a number of them got killed and wounded. That left Deese. The off in charge of the machine gun party, left in the Deese, and Godley was one of the party, I forget the name now, but they were all wounded during the attack, and Deese wasn't with the machine gun party, I thought he was away from it, I can remember, but when things got a bit, very close, he went a bit, he wounded about three times, Deese was, and so he still went to the gun, where Godley was firing it, and... He got killed there. He died there, leaving Godley in charge of the gun. You see, what the guns were... So when things got to when they started crossing the bridge, Godley got sense enough to... He took the breech box out of the gun, the thing to do, and picked the gun over into the water. So they couldn't use it on us, you see, they treated him. Of course, he got captured there. But there was some... villagers, there were some kids up there, I remember, were quite near the riverbank, and I remember Godley shouting at them to get away, get out of the way, and that's what they were doing, shouting, get away out, but these kids were within about 50 yards.
During the attack?
Yes, during the attack.
Did you know Godley and Dees at all?
Hmm?
Did you know Godley or Dees?
Oh, yes, I will.
What do you remember about them?
We'll get Godley first. I was in his bathroom at Aldershot. In fact, they used to call him Mud Godley because of his stomach. Sidney Godley, and another thing that I always remember, he joined about a couple of days before me, the Fusiliers, and his number was 13597, and mine was 13599. Well, during that time, there was a blacking firm, a firm that made blacking for boots, which they used to do, polish like they used to do, tin polish, but there was a blacking, it had a big tin, metal tin, silver coloured tin, and it contained blacking, and you just had to wet your brush and dip it and clean your boots with that sort of thing. Well, this firm, it got on the centre of it, 97. You see, which was, I suppose, the year they were... you got Dale Martin down the side, 97 in big... So any man had anybody in which was being a London investment, a London firm, any man that had 97 in his number, they called him Dale Martin. Well, of course, Godley ended in 97, and they wouldn't call him God, they called him Dale Martin. Come on, Dale Martin, as they used to say. It was quite common. The fellows in the back say, wouldn't call him his name. Say, come on, Dale Martin, because he's got this 97 on the ten, you see. Anyway,
was he did you get on with him well? Was he
yes, he was quite sportsman. He played football a lot, and of course, Cockney came Bethnal Green, and yes, I knew him quite well. He was very friendly. I was in that same room, like the bins, only 12% of the room. And
did you think he was going to be a? Hero type?
Oh no, he's a bit. He could be a little bit, quarrelsome at times. He could, anything of trouble like it, he'd enter it. He was a very nice fellow, mind you, but he wouldn't let things like it dodge him. He'd enter in it. If there's any trouble going on, big God, he'd be. So this, well then.
What about Dees? What do you remember about
Dees? Dees, yes, I remember Dees was the lieutenant. Rather short chap, Irish. And I can always remember him in a position when the war started, standing down looking at my company. And like, I'd always picture him, look at my company like that, before he went into action. Yes, I knew him very well, Dees. Short chap, not very old, of course, only early 20s, I suppose. And that was that about Dees.
What did you think of him? Do you think it was
him? I liked him, yes. All our offers were very popular. We had all our offers in the fugitives at the battalion were very, very...
What happened when the attacks, German attacks started? What did you see? Did you?
Yes, I could see them coming. Started to come across. They were closer, getting close to the riverbank, the other side, very close, nearer and nearer. And this officer, Bam Smith, he was a man. He'd been out in Tibet in the fight in Tibet in 1904, I think it was, and he suffered from snow blindness. He's linked a lot, you know, and he's got my company in, but. Another thing about Bowden Smith will make you laugh is that at Aldershot we used to have the kit inspection. It was every Friday it was kit inspection, and you used to have to pull your bed out. There was in this barrack room there was about 12, I suppose, six one side, six another, and we used to have to pull our bed out we had a brown blanket on, you see, and on this blanket you have to show all your kit. Everything you got with there. See, God help if there's anything missing. See, it was a whole knife, fork, spoon, razor, comb, lather brush. Well, I didn't shave them, but anyway, I shaved them. Then you had to have a pair of boots with soles upwards, a pair on there, and a suit of khaki folded. Everything you possessed was on there. And God help if you got anything short. So, on this particular occasion, bad as Mrs. Cup come in. Well, if you had a clean, good kit, good shove kit, you could be. Used suspended for a month. He was let off for a month, and they had good kits to see. They got to show there. Well, this particular Friday morning, in came Bowden Smith, and he had a little white dog. He used to go around with him, and that morning we sat on the end of the bed like this on the end of his bed. We sat but our blanco one side, and the other side soap. It showed everything you see. But this particular day, I ain't got any soap. I had to use other people who use one of others. So, what I got a piece of cheese, and I made it like a somewhat shape round it and put it where the shape should be, you see. But I knew Bounsmith couldn't see because he got the snow, he should blink a lot, he couldn't see properly. Why was it in the oven? But his dog came up and started eating it. My cheese. So I remember that he turned around, he said, oh, that's funny shape, isn't it? He said. And looked at it and laughed and walked on. But what we used to do was about the size, there was a space between about, I suppose, 6 feet between the beds, right from one side of the wall to the other. And what we used to do when the fellas on the other side, if they were short of anything, you know, he couldn't see properly. Say they were short of a pair of boots or something like that, anything short of, while he's going down there, we'd pitch on, they'd catch them and put them on their side, you see, so that they had a full kit on when he came down.
Getting back to the attack, what could you see during the attack yourself? What formation, what was your first sight of the Germans?
Their wave coming over, they were. And
was there a lot of them?
Well, as far as I could see, there was quite a number. And they would fire quite, yeah, so was, I suppose, more than what we got. Because you see farther back, you know, the Germans had come further back.
But when you say they're in waves, you mean sort of extended line?
Yes, yes.
They weren't in formation?
Oh, no. They didn't come up with everything. And
Did you open fire?
Yes. I only fired a bit because I was behind the company, you see, with the officers, the company officers. And it's been going on for some...
Were you nervous at all when the action started?
No, I don't think so. Suddenly, but it was all new to me, new to all of us, that things like that never... You didn't really think about that. Shells seemed to worry me a bit, the bursting of the shells.
Did you feel you could hold back the Germans? You know, what was your impression that you could stop them all?
Well, what we were told, when I went back to the first message, I got the impression that we would draw them over, draw them back. So I thought, so it's what the troops thought, the troops and shells, that we were falling. Because we hadn't fallen back then, because I'd been down this message. I came back, and I was a bit of a job on my way back. I got back there, and when I got back, I'd been gone about half an hour, I suppose. When I came back... They were still firing there. We weren't firing much, but they were firing. And I took up a position there, and shortly afterwards, you know, I was about 3 in the afternoon, I don't know, I had taken another message down. And by then I got an idea that there was something happening, you see, how impressive that was. And so I got down this message, and when I got away, I had a legit in back. I started going back and met some troops coming down. And Fiddler said, "Where are you going?" I didn't know, they weren't my battalion. I said, "You'll have a job." He said, "They're retiring from the river." I said, "Retiring?" He said, "Yes." I suppose that's a message I took back, I don't know. So, so when I got back, I had a job to get through. I had to go different roads with some troops coming down, you see. When I got back to where we were, they'd gone. I didn't see anybody.
So what about the Germans? Where were they?
They were over the bridge.
They were coming up. Yeah. Could you see them coming towards
you? Yes, I see. I wonder how that happened. So I cleared off much as I could. You see, I picked up other regiments, I suppose the same, and of course I was behind the troops. I was between the troops retiring and the Germans advancing. And though I couldn't see much because we got through the town. I always remember, as I went through the town, I saw a man there. I don't know who he was. He got a pack mule. So it shows how close we were to the line. Our pack mules were in Mons, the expedition. And I saw him put his head out, so I in cover, put his head out, and looked up, and got shot clean to the head. The fed one in bed in a second. I thought, "God, what's happening?" And then I see some of the artillery was entering the road where I was, coming on slave along the road. And because I came back and picked up some other fellows, and we fell back, but I didn't find my regiment. And
how did you feel about this? I mean, being isolated, retreat?
We were told. I've got no idea what we were told. Drawing them into a position to make a counterattack on them. You see, draw them into a trap. That's what I say. Idea. That's what the troops had an idea that most of the troops did. They didn't know anything.
But you did. The troops feel they could have held the line they were on along the?
Well, they thought that there was we used to talk about them. They thought that the position was we were right. We were drawing them back into a trap. And they surrender, you see, they'd be captured. That's what.
Were the troops firing during the battle? Was there a lot? Were the troops firing using rapid fire, or were they
not so much as we were? Our fellows were very rapid. The fire from our fired from the riverbank. I was only a few yards away. Fired from the riverbank was more like machine gun fire. So
it really was noticeably fast.
Yes,
fire.
Yes, it didn't altogether the German fire. Our fire was terrific. Every man was firing he'd been taught the fire fitted. And he's making use of it.
And they were doing that?
Yes, yes. Our machine guns were silenced then.
What were the results of the fire? Were they hitting the Germans hard? Were the Germans suffering a lot of casualties?
Well, as far as I can see, they were. Yes, they start reinforcing one another, come out by reinforcements.
How were the tanks breaking down? Were they just falling back, or were they because they were...
They were reinforced. They didn't fall back from the riverbank. In fact, they're doing the best to get across. There's so many of them, you see.
The riverbank, then?
Yes, got the riverbank. And I didn't see them cross it because I've backed this message. when I came back, I didn't know what had happened. I saw different regiments coming through the street. and I just didn't know. So I couldn't find my battalion at all.
So, how did you go? You were in the Germans and your own
British
troops.
British troops.
What happened next?
Well, as we gradually went along, there are other men the same, so I went with them, they all went together, some regiments, some of the Northumberland, some of the Fusiliers, some of the Lincolns, and the other regiments were from another Middlesex, I think they were, and anyway, by the Mons, and another came along, he said, get all the people, get together, he said, we'll have to make find a party of ourselves, so we defend ourselves. So indeed, we went along with the firing going on behind us. Because the thing that upset it was these refugees. It sounds the refugees coming from Mons and that sort of mingling with the troops. And they were pushing all sorts of things. They're good.
They hadn't evacuated the town until the British fell.
Oh,
fell
no,
back.
No, no.
And they were actually, as you mentioned earlier, present during the battle.
The town and the troops, there's still some left there, of course, some didn't leave. A lot of them left.
What sort of problem did they pose, the refugees?
Well, they seemed to be flabbergasted. They didn't see it possible that they'd be driven back. They didn't think the troops would come to fall back. They didn't know what to think. And of course, we couldn't understand their language. The troops couldn't, but I know I helped some old boy there. He got a damn great bundle carrying, like struggling along he was, and I know I helped him with that some long way. Carried this thing for him, his bundle of clothes, I suppose, I don't know. But yeah, the troops helped him a lot. The only way we got to say, they went across fields, the nearest route, you see, to get away from where we kept to the roads, that mostly. They went across the.
Were they cleared off the roads then to facilitate that?
What
the refugees, were they not allowed
not
on the
road? Not for about a couple of days. They get it because they pick it up more. Well, before we got to Freemere's, I suppose that was the afternoon, the following, there's nothing that night much, only moved. We were going back very fast because you couldn't know where we were going. And the next morning we met on the train, even they picked up the British troops, they had my battalion. And this Captain Bridges, I think his name was Bridges, we were attacked. This must be near Lee Cateau. We were attacked by a regiment of cavalry. There's only about 50 of us, you know, and these lancers, Uhlans.
Can you describe exactly what happened?
Yes, we were walking back along these roads, you know, on the retreat, and suddenly could hear the noise and saw a lot of these German cavalry charging us on the. It was about, 500 yards away, or a bit more, perhaps. And he's basically got them all down and with a line of bank on the other side of the road and drove them off. It was like a lot of casualties with our rifle fire, drove them off and they retired. Good job. Anyway, so I'll prepare again.
Were they particularly frightened? Were people particularly nervous of cavalry?
Well, it was the first we'd seen. They didn't give us a good impression then because we drove them back.
Did they just give up, or were they forced back through casualties?
I think the idea was that they thought there was a bigger number of troops, more a number of troops there than what there were. The stragglers there, they think, because it's impossible to stop them. But I've got an idea when they retired, and I think they got an idea there was a lot of troops there. And
how close had they got? How close had they got?
Well, I suppose within 300 yards. The firing distance, easy, you know.
And then they turned aside.
Yes, they turned on. They lost some casualties, a lot of casualties there. But, because we went on then from there.
What did you think this boded for cavalry? Did you think they were a real Did you think they were going to be effective, or this your first experience of them, or did you think they'd
I thought they'd used more than they were. I thought they were going to be an arm that'd be do a lot of damage, a lot of casualties. I thought they were going to be a rough fight with the cavalry. But as we got, as I knew we were taught to use the rat, that we got the monthly advantage, really. And they were fair-sized targets, you know. You get the men on the horse and it, didn't we?
How long were you retreating with this mixed unit of 50?
I suppose we picked up men as we went along. See, the original stragglers, like myself and a few others, were really members of the regiment that were down on some business and got caught in the retreat. But they were all right. But a lot of the men fell out of the retreating forces, you see, and they had to be picked up. So we had to carry one another's rifles, and all some were in a bad way. Some were these reservists, you see. Some of them were 40 years of age.
So you picked up stragglers that probably
were... Had fallen out. And we got them together, and I remember I saw a couple, and they got their feet were so bad, they were bleeding through their... She took their putties off and tied their putties, threw the boots away, and tied the putties around their feet and marched back to the putties. I mean, the bad one on were...
These stragglers, would any coercion be used to make them join? I mean, would they be forced to join?
Not till they got to, about 2 days out, I suppose. Well, then they were dropping out of the whole world, you know, and it's Captain Bridges. There's no other NGO there, there's only him. Well, he got them together, they give them a rest on the side of the road and get them on. Well, when we got to St. Quentin, I always remember we halted in St. Quentin, they were bad waving, some were sitting on the side of the road crying somewhere, and he went, there's a shop there, a toy shop, and I remember him going to his shop and got a drum. Would he pay for it? I don't know. There's some people left, I don't know, I can't remember. But they got this drum out of the shop, out the window. I believe he got a tin whistle as well, I think. I'm not quite sure about that. I think he did. And he came out and he spoke to the nanny boy, come right now, and he got this drum going, got them together, and they marked behind the drum, these stragglers did, so they've got them all together.
And so he never had to employ force? He never had
No. He tried to... He got one helped another, you see. The younger men, the more fit stragglers, helped these elderly ones. Some went left behind. You couldn't get them all back and taken prisoner. But